From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome to the July edition of the Bletchley Park podcast. This month we had some timely visitors at the launch of a very special watch in the mansion. The Trust's former director has been seeing the fruits of his labour after hearing he's been named on the Queen's Birthday Honours List. And the local MP says the restoration of huts 3, 6 and 11 and Block C will really put Milton Keynes on the heritage map. Bletchley Park's MP, Ian Stewart, took a tour of some of the buildings being brought back to life as part of the Heritage Lottery funded project. He was one of the first people in many years to be able to stand at one end of Block C and see all the way to the other end. He was shown around by Bletchley Park's CEO, Ian Standen.
Back to sort of summer 1940.
Right.
So in the tennis courts here, you'll have a family tennis court, as was at the time, and grass. And then looking across the mansion here, what is now a car park, will be grass. Mm-hmm. In 1940, of course, they'd already built some huts on the car park here. Right. And those, because they'd long gone, will be just marked out on the grass with sort of trenches with gravel in.
Okay.
So you get the outline of the huts that were here at the time. So people can enjoy, you know, sitting out here. Mm. And of course, it evokes the whole feeling that was here in the park in the war, which with these fairly rudimentary huts, and then some nice grounds where people could sit out and enjoy it, which was part of the design of the place that Denniston, who was the head of the Code and Cipher School, was very keen that people had recreational space. So we'll take it back to that. And as you just heard, car going past us, stopping cars mixing with the ever-increasing number of visitors.
I'm sure health and safety would be proud of you.
Absolutely. So that moment last year when I watched the coaches going round the with 1,300 people on the side, it was just not a thing we want to be doing for the future.
Right. The blast balls you mentioned, is that the distance from the huts?
Exactly, right. Yeah. So you can see down here and there, that's how they would be, right close to the huts. These were taken down, I'm guessing, post-war. And then look across the way there, huts 11 and 11A, which are outside the original project, and we're now taking those over again. Hut 11 will open up this summer, telling the story of the people who worked the bomb, so the Wren story, and 11A behind will put the bomb rebuild in and tell the story of how the bomb was invented, built and operated, and that's hopefully open before the end of this year. So next year, we've got a lot of new stuff coming online, not only in terms of exhibitions, but also the multimedia guide, etc., etc.
This is launching at the start of this year's season?
Yes, Easter, which is sort of the start of our season anyway. Yeah. That's it. Left-hand side here, this is one of the new car parks.
What was here before?
Block F, which was the biggest building on site, was knocked down in the 1980s, and it's been grass ever since. So we're now turning this into the car park here. And all being well, they'll be completed early summer, so we can then start moving traffic from the centre of the site out to here, and landscaping work can get on the way.
After supporting Bletchley Park for so many years, as you have, how does it feel now to see so much work going on?
I think it's really exciting that plans I've heard discussed for some time are now being delivered, and there's something tangible to see. And I think once they're all in place, it will be a huge boost to the Milton Keynes tourist economy in general, and really put us on the map as a World Heritage Site.
It's an odd thing for us, having spent so many years trying to keep the bulldozers away.
You can't preserve everything as it was, and to make it a true heritage site, you've got to have a very high quality offer these days. So putting all these different facilities in to be able to cope with the numbers that come, so they can experience, you know, what went on here as accurately as possible, is very important. I remember having discussions when I first came on the political scene in Milton Keynes, and it was for many a time touch and go whether the thing would survive at all. A number of dedicated people kept the dream alive, and there's been a lot of people put a lot of effort in to getting us to where we are today. And to have the sort of, maybe not the final point in within touching distance, but certainly a realisation of the dream is very exciting indeed.
A few days later came the happy news that former director of the Bletchley Park Trust, Simon Greenish, had been awarded the MBE for services to English heritage. He laid the foundations for much of the change and development we can now see happening. So I asked him how it feels to see his plans come to life.
That's been the entrance, obviously. Thank you.
It's quite black.
Asphalt, you think it's... A lot of old MOD buildings with the same problem.
So obviously we'd have to scrub it up in some way, shape or form.
You do a controlled shot blast machine.
I'm watching you look round. What are you thinking?
Well, it's astonishing really, because it's exactly as you imagined it when it was all big and open. And the first thing that you see is, despite the fact that you were in austerity times, look at the detail here. You've got special bricks and rounded bricks.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that all over the site. When you think that all the bricklayers... and everybody were all at war, and they've actually got time and money to make special bricks. But you can see exactly what it's going to be. You know, the sheer amount of space is just fabulous.
Yeah. You ever had the chance to come in it when it wasn't open to the public?
I love that it's open now,
but you would never have got a sense of this amount of space.
No.
It was lots of pokey little rooms.
And if you walk down the corridors that they've built in, they were absolutely horrible. It was like the Black Hole of Calcutta. Awful.
I felt we should be marketing ourselves as a horror film location at one point.
I've had people in Block D saying, we spend a fortune getting peeling paint, and you've got it by the square yard.
Yeah.
Or square acre, I think. Yeah. When you imagine, we've pored over these plans for years, looking at what you can do and thinking, there's going to be a lot of people coming here, how do you get them round? And the thinking process for how you get them in so that they can use your facilities like the shops and the loos before they pay, but you've got to control the paying people so that they can do the same. That took a long time.
How do you feel looking at it now?
It's doing exactly what I hoped it would. When you look at the damage that's around here, it's really quite minor. All of that's repairable. And so the atmosphere is here.
Can you now see it filled up with polarith machines and so, as it was in wartime, now that you see the space?
Absolutely, yeah. It's an industrial building doing an industrial job.
This is kind of a manifestation of where you're at now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you put in all the slog for all those years and now the rewards are coming to life.
Yeah.
And not only that, of course, you now heard you've getting your MBE. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's great. And I think it's partly recognition for the site and how important it is. And also, I think, for the people, you know, you go back to 1992, all those enthusiastic volunteers who said, far too valuable a historic site, mustn't be lost.
You can never really narrow it down, can you? Whenever you try to credit people who saved Bletchley Park, you can never say enough or include enough people, can you?
You can't, but certainly those people in 1992 and, you know, in the years after, when the Trust went through an awful period with money, the fact that they stuck with it and tried to fight their way through, I think it's just proved how worthwhile it all is.
When you came into it, it wasn't, you know, course celeb, it wasn't something that was particularly popular. It was a crumbling money pit that people didn't really love and appreciate.
They certainly didn't, and they didn't appreciate the importance of the site. There's no doubt about that. I remember people saying, why do you want to work there? It's just a pile of old wooden huts. And then we had the group from Parliament who came down, their Arts and Heritage group, 50 or so of them, the great and the good from Parliament, and the chairman's speech at the end is, thank you very much for looking after us, and we always looked after them very well. He said, architecturally, this is probably the least interesting site, because they like their Grade 1 buildings. He said, probably the least interesting site we've ever been to. But he said, from a history point of view, it's probably the most important. And so they recognised its value, even if you hadn't got the architectural content to it. I think there's an argument that says that Bletchley Park is probably the most important site of 20th century Europe, if not the world, because the impact of what happened here at the time, and indeed after the war, is enormous. The only other site that you could look at which has potentially the same impact is Los Alamos, which obviously developed the first nuclear bomb. And it's that site and Bletchley as single sites which I think had more impact on the way we live now than probably any other sites anywhere.
As someone who's only got involved fairly recently, I think we run the risk of taking for granted people's recognition of how important it is.
Yeah.
But you slogged against that tide of disinterest for a long time.
I think there was a lack of knowledge and a lack of understanding, partly because of the secrecy of the place, that nobody had ever really understood what had gone on here. And that, of course, includes a lot of the code breakers, as we were talking about earlier, with Oliver Lorne, who, if he didn't know exactly what was going on here, what about the other 10,000? Because they certainly wouldn't. They certainly didn't.
Did you say it was only 32 people who actually knew?
32 people knew about the ultra secret, yeah.
Wow.
Churchill got involved, he said, far too valuable. He just took the book of those who were on the list and took them all out.
Closed it down.
Closed it down. Mm. And he just said, only for me and the chosen few.
Makes you wonder what we're doing now, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the recognition.
Thank you.
It's well deserved.
summer has finally arrived and we've got plenty to do and see at the home of the Codebreakers, including Family Fun Wednesdays every week throughout the school holidays, with special days, special events and special activities laid on just for children. And on the 3rd and 4th of August, we've got a traditional country day out for you at Bletchley Park with tea and music in Summer on the Lawn. There'll be local craft and produce stalls, as well as activities just for children and much more. The Bremont Codebreaker Watch is now in production at the company's Chronometer Emporium. Each watch will contain a fragment of a floorboard taken from Hut 6, where German Army and Air Force Enigma was deciphered, and a serial number taken from a punch card used in the indexing and cross-referencing system in Block C. Some of the profits will go towards the ongoing restoration of Bletchley Park. The watch was launched here with help from some very special guests, including veterans, a few well-known faces, and Winston Churchill himself. It's a lovely June evening for once.
It is. There are a few clouds, but my goodness, there's a bit of blue up there as well.
Yes, we're hopeful. Soon the air raid siren will ring out and gather us all into the mansion for the speeches to introduce a very special, I gather we call it a chronometer rather than a watch.
Oh, do we? Yeah. I call it an instrument.
You had a very special tour of the workshop. We're not to call it a factory, are we?
No. And I'm not calling it a workshop.
What would you call
I'm
it?
I'm calling it an operating theatre.
What was it like?
Well, I did invite myself because I knew I was coming here and I thought, I'm not going to talk about something I know nothing about. So I rang them and I said, look, this is me. Oh, yes, we know all about you. I said, I really would like to come and see your premises. Tomorrow morning at 10. I said, oh, no, I can't. I was playing Scrabble and I said, but I have an appointment. 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Fine. So anyway, I went along at 3 o'clock. And the first thing you do, well, it's all locked. You've got to sort of knock. There's no bell. There's no letterbox. It's all terribly security conscious. Get in, and you look round, and there's a pile of white shoes there, slippers. So you kick off your shoes. Of course, needless to say, they were all your size rather than mine, so she's looking at the man who's doing them.
I would guess, about a size 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, I kicked off my shoes. Now I just walked about in my stocking feet. But that was okay, because the place is so clean, it's so sterile, and it's so quiet. You know, you say factory or workshop, you get noise. You know, I know what a factory's like. Noisy, dirty.
So it's all handmade, no machinery?
No. There's one, and I think they were all chaps, sitting at separate tables, and they had white coats on, and they had a jeweller's eyeglass, which they used when they needed to. And they're assembling these instruments, as I choose to call them. And when they stop just for a moment to adjust something, they get a bell-shaped glass and put it on the top. They're so conscious of dust. They mustn't let dust near anything. And then they take it off and they get on with the business of doing it. Then I think the bit that intrigued me most was I saw this wire thing going round like this, not very thick wire, going round and round like this with two or three watches attached to it, not with their wristbands but just the face. And I stood that as long as I could. I thought, I've got to work this out. I'm not going to be silly enough to admit that I don't know what's happening. But in the end I gave in and I spoke to Nick, who was showing me round, and I said, Nick, I'm sorry, but what? He said, we're powering them up. It's because they're wrist powered. This thing is imitating the wrist going round, this wire thing, and they just go round and round and round.
So you're part of the show tonight, basically. You've been talking to journalists on the way up here. What sort of thing were they asking you?
The one that I was talking to mostly was an American, and he was intrigued because he could not understand how the bomb works. Well, OK, I worked it for a time. I've been here for all these years and everything, and I couldn't explain to anybody how it works. I know exactly what it's doing. I can teach it to do what it has to do, but I'm not actually sure what all the innards are doing as I speak now.
It's advanced engineering, isn't it?
It was way ahead of its time. I mean, I know it's been supplanted by more modern technology now, but it was very much ahead of its time when it was being used as it was.
So what do you think of the association then with Bremont picking Bletchley Park to make a special watch with the theme and the bits inside it?
Well, I'm a great one for advertising. If you don't speak about things, people don't get to hear about them. Advertising is money, and it'll do us good, and it will do them good, and I'm a happy bunny.
ladies and gentlemen, if you can make your way inside, please.
I spent any amount of time with you, we were waiting for Victoria Wood, weren't we?
That's right, yeah. And it was raining, wasn't it?
It did little else that day, didn't it?
Yes.
At the Yorkshire Air Museum. You've been in some quite odd programmes, haven't you? That,
yes.
And Escape to the Country.
Escape to the Country, yes. That was a very short appearance, I think.
It's amazing how much time you spend to make sort of 30 seconds of television.
That's right,
isn't it?
Yes. And of course, my first main appearance was in Station X. Do you remember that? A series of four programmes that was put on by Channel 4. And that was quite a widely broadcast, I think, over a period of time. It must have been about 5 years ago, or that, more even.
I think, it was a bit more, but I think that did a lot for this place in terms of public awareness. It's
That's
quite
true.
Well regarded and told the story well, I gather. Documentaries can be quite powerful like that, can't they? But the kind of programmes that we've sort of been approached by more recently, the couple of things, the lighter-hearted things that I've been asking you to help me with, you know, the Victoria Wood programme and Escape to the Country, things like that, I think that gets to a whole other audience that's perhaps not already interested in this kind of thing.
Yes, quite a few people have come up to me and said, I saw you with Victoria Wood. And of course, she's the name who's quite a big draw. Ruth Vaughan, that doesn't cut the mustard with too many people.
We'll get there, Ruth.
Yes.
We're working on it. It's growing all the time. But I think what appealed to me about those programmes and asking you to do those things was that you explain it in a very accessible way.
Good.
You've had lots of experience, so you've been coming here for 20 years telling people about things. I still see you occasionally giving tours.
Yes. Oh, I come here every fortnight at least during the summer. It's only the three really cold months that I don't come, and neither tubes don't usually run very well then. So I come in normally from about March through to November. Also, there's one or two companies who I've been on holiday with, and when they hear that I work there, and if they're within striking distance, they come and bring people in. So that also spreads the word.
And what's your favourite aspect of the Bletchley Park story to tell? Is it the machines? Is it the code-breaking? Is it the secrecy? Is it the industrialisation?
Well, that which really interests the people I take round. The first thing they're really interested in is how it was kept a secret for so many years, and the work that was so difficult and involved up to 8,000 people in code-breaking at one time, how they kept it so quiet, and the ramifications. And I say to them, well, to tell you the truth, I didn't know the vast spread of people who were here, the personnel, and it was so secret that I never heard the word enigma mentioned in the 2 years I was in the Wrens. All I was ever told was one sentence: we are breaking German codes. End of story. And then we were taken in and we were taught how to manipulate these bomb machines. We did it until the atomic bomb was dropped. We were then told to dismantle these machines wire by wire. And all the bits were sold off as government surplus. And I still never heard the word enigma. It was only when a book was written 30 years later that I began to understand what we had really been doing. And there is a young lady, a bit older than me, but still young at heart. She was a messenger here right through the war, and she didn't know that code-breaking was happening here. She was just taking messages from one room to another. And that is what interests people, mainly.
Structurally, I don't think anything like it had been done before in terms of organisation and the way it was industrialised. An intelligence factory.
Indeed.
And that sort of compartmentalisation is actually quite an interesting organisational model, isn't it?
It is.
Where people in Department A have no idea what's going on in Department B.
Absolutely.
You think that that's quite a bad thing to do, but actually there are some purposes for that kind of approach.
Well, it made each person focused. People often say, what was it like here? And I say, you have two lives. You had your social life, which was quite normal. Hello, how are you? Going dancing tonight? And there was the work inside what I call B block, because for us, the bomb machines were always in what was known as B block. And that was focused, that was serious, that was tiring. It was a different part of your life, and the two were completely separate, and that's the way they had to be.
You closed the door on it at the end
of the
shift.
Absolutely.
It's nice to see the mansion dolled up like this, isn't it?
Yes.
They've gone to quite some length, haven't they?
Yes. During the war, we didn't have drinks served. It was ersatz tea, you know, if you were lucky. There was no coffee in those days. Hence the Victoria Wood programme about tea and how it was in the war. Nobody drank coffee.
Well, here we are in 2013. Maybe we can interest you in a cocktail.
Well, thank you very much.
Park as your next
I think both of us had always been slightly fascinated with the whole enigma story, Bletchley Park. And after working with HMS Victory on our Victory Watch, we were looking for our next thing, and both of us saw the inspiration behind what we could do with Bletchley Park, and it came from there. But you always loved it as well.
You know, our grandfather used to talk about the stories. He was a surgeon on the hospital ships. And we became obsessed with Second World War-y stuff through flying as well. So these conversations at home, and Bletchley came into the conversations even back then. So when it came to us thinking about our next project, I mean, we'd thought about this sort of 2 or 3 years ago as a possible... I mean, it was just no-brainer for us. It was fantastic.
And it's lovely with Bletchley Park, you're going back to this history, but it's not celebrating war in people killing each other. It's celebrating the brightest minds coming together and saving lives. And we didn't want to associate ourselves with the Second World War in any other way.
And you come tonight and you meet some of the veterans who worked here during, you know, the 40s. Sharp as attack, just amazing. And I don't think I've been more moved for a long time than I have been tonight, just meeting people like Jerry, Jean, Betty, just amazing, amazing people. Really amazing.
And what's your next project? Have you got that for you?
The next project is actually delivering these code breakers. So that's the thing, it's such a long process we work on. You're trying to build and inspire yourself to come up with this beautiful watch. You then have to launch the watch, and then really the hard work begins. You've got to deliver these watches and build them. So it takes us 2 years to build a watch. So all these components we're putting together, it doesn't happen quickly.
Well, congratulations on a fantastic product, and thank you for the support of Bletchley Park as we go forward.
No, actually, thank you guys, because you guys have been so nice, so easy, so lovely to work with. So thank you so much.
And we, yeah, and then we wish you all the best with it. What you're going to do here and the plans and the developments you've got.
The team you've got in place to put it together is just, I think you're going to see some amazing changes here. We can already see them. And you come back here in 3 or 4 years' time and it'll be, I mean, it really is here for future generations now, which it never necessarily was before, and which is, I think, very, very special.
Well, I look forward to seeing you look blown away then as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much, indeed.
Brilliant evening, complete success, everybody seems to enjoy themselves, a great opportunity to promote both the Codebreaker Watch and Bletchley Park itself.
Done a bit of networking this evening,
haven't you? Lots of networking, some very interesting people who have ranged from people who are Bremen ambassadors who wear the watch to advertise Bremen to avid Bremen watch collectors who seem to have more than one timepiece each.
Big question, Ian, have you got one now?
I haven't got one yet. I should go and ask my wife very nicely if she's going to let me have one.
She's going to have to save up for a while, I think, isn't she?
No, she's not going to save up for it. I'm going to have to save up for it.
Nice to see everyone all glammed up.
Okay,
I'll see your feet.
Hello, my feet are hurting now. It's been a long evening.
Thanks to the staff, volunteers and veterans of Bletchley Park who took part in this podcast. For more information, go to bletchleypark.org.uk or find us on iTunes. Also, follow us on Twitter, where we are at @bparkpodcast, and join our Facebook group. Thanks to Audioboo, who make this podcast possible. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.